It is a physical therapy day on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in today. Our physical therapists are back. Jill Tine Nissenbaum and Lori Tine Brody. Jill, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill, good to see you.
It's great to be here.
And Lori Tine Brody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Lori, good to see you.
Awesome to be here on a beautiful October day.
We will start by talking about the importance of strengthening your knee and hip muscles after, maybe before, too, total hip replacement surgery. And certainly invite your questions as we move along today. Maybe you or someone you know has had a hip or knee replaced. Tell us about it. Maybe you want some advice on how to avoid hip pain and surgery. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. First, let's talk about hip arthroplasty, also known, I guess, as hip replacement.
Right.
When is a hip replacement necessary, Jill?
Well, that's a great question. And I love Lori's answer to that when it is typically when your bad days start to outweigh your good days and you feel like it's compromising your lifestyle, it's probably time. So you will need to report pain. We can't go simply on radiographic changes because we know people have significant radiographic changes or changes on x-ray and don't have that much pain. So we need to do a good clinical exam and identify deficits, weakness, decreased mobility, pain with walking, pain and stiffness in the morning, perhaps, and then those things start really impeding your lifestyle where you're not going to do those activities you normally would do because your pain, weakness, and or pain or hip pain or weakness is limiting you from doing those things.
Right. When, you know, I don't go out in my garden anymore because I can't get back up if I get down because I have pain. So one of the things that I tell people to watch for is that their world is getting smaller. That is, they're doing fewer things, the things that they used to do. They become more sedentary. They spend more time at home. They spend more time sitting. They sit to prepare their food and so on. And so those are the subtle things that we look for that say it's time to intervene before this affects other aspects of your life, your general health, your body mass index, your strength, your cardiovascular function, because you're being less active.
And your mental health. Socialization
yes.
is a big
yes.
deal. So I'm not going to go to the farmer's market anymore because I can't walk all the way from my car to the market and walk around
all
the market.
All the way around.
Right.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of things that Lori's referring to.
So we go ahead and have it. How long does it take to recover from hip replacement?
Well, recovery is a million-dollar question, which kind of brings us a little bit into this paper. So
right,
I would definitely say that people who have a total hip replacement will report that their pain has subsided very, very quickly. In other words, once the postoperative pain is over, most people feel much, much better with regards to their hip replacement. A knee replacement's a little bit different in that you have to really work on range of motion. That's not so much the case with a hip replacement. So postoperatively, people feel pretty good after their postoperative pain is gone, but
right, but there's residual weakness.
Right.
And one of the, so when people get a knee replacement, which is a really difficult surgery to recover from, a total hip replacement is very different from that in that people usually feel a lot less pain and they feel better after their surgery. And as a result of that, often we see surgeons who will not refer their patients to physical therapy afterwards because the patient reports that their pain is better. However, what we've seen from
this...
You
got a study for us here.
We have a study for you, found that up to 12 months following a total hip replacement, that the patients showed deficits in their hip strength on the surgical side and on the non-surgical side, as well as deficits in strength in the muscles around the knee. So many times in the literature on hip replacement, they compare the surgical side to the non-surgical side, and they say, oh, the surgical side is the same as the non-surgical side, so they're fully recovered. This paper was one of the first ones to compare the surgical side and the non-surgical side at the hip and at the knee to control groups of the same age and general health. And they found that these people had strength deficits 12 months following their hip replacement on both sides and in their knee. Not only that, these people, this study was done in Japan, so of course there's limitations. One of the other interesting limitations, and this is what I say to my students, how many of you have read the method section of the paper? They all look down.
Because they just read the results.
Because they only read the abstract and the results. These patients were in the hospital for 3 weeks following their hip. Right, right. Who's in the hospital for 3 weeks? Here it's an outpatient procedure.
And then they had outpatient rehabilitation for 5 months. So compared to how we manage patients, status post total hip arthroplasty in the United States, these people had what I would call the Cadillac of care.
Yes and no. So I'm going to push back on that a little bit. Yes, they had a lot of therapy, but they were in the hospital for 3 weeks. Like, what do you do in the hospital?
Right, right.
You lay around a lot. If you're at home and you have to manage for yourself, you have to cook, you have to clean, you have to shop, you have to do all those things, you want to get back out in your garden. I'm not sure what happened in those first 3 weeks. If it was better to be in the hospital getting therapy, you know.
Are the procedures different?
No,
Japan?
No. Mm-mm.
The surgical procedures, no.
Yeah, no, they were all posterolateral or lateral procedures.
Right.
So, yeah, no, there's no difference in the procedure. It's just interesting, the healthcare system. And I can't say whether that 3 weeks in the hospital was helpful or inhibited the return of their strength.
And similarly, we do it as an outpatient procedure, and the same thing could be true here in the United States. There could be some people who are like, yep, I'm going to get back up, and I'm going to do my gardening, and I'm going to go out and about, and I'm going to be social. And there may be other people who have a little bit of a fear avoidance who actually are a little less mobile and more sedentary. So it
wouldn't be bad to replicate this study in the U.S.
It would be amazing.
Well,
do you have that kind of money, Larry?
No, I think the gauntlet has been dropped here.
Right, I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea. And one of the things I found very interesting, because there is a little bit of debate about the surgical approach, because with a posterolateral approach, you have to cut through the gluteus medius and then reattach it. And that's the big kind of hip stabilizing muscle. And in this study, what they found is that the opposite side was also incredibly weak. So we can't say the incision in and of itself is causative for that hip weakness.
Right, right, exactly. There are a lot of variables. Right.
So here you two are physical therapist experts. What exercises, let's put it that way, should people do during their recovery from hip replacement surgery to increase? Because you don't want to lose.
Absolutely.
Oh, right, right, right. So the first thing is these patients need to come to therapy after their hip replacement, even if their pain is much better. Because what we see is down the road, that hip weakness will catch up with them.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come back with trochanteric bursitis. They'll come back with back pain. They'll come back with knee pain because the muscles around their hips are not doing what they're supposed to do. So come in and get set up on an exercise program to strengthen these hip abductor muscles, the ones that stabilize the hip, that raise your leg out to the side, that externally rotate your hip.
And it's also very important to work on balance. Mm-hmm. So this demographic is typically a demographic that's also at risk for falls. So not only do they need to work on strength, but they need to work on balance as well. And I think the other thing we've learned with this population is, I think as physical therapists, many times we're hesitant to really add load. And there's been a lot of compelling research that shows that people can perform heavy resistance strength training in an appropriate environment. So I think we're always afraid we're just going to put a little 1-pound weight on that person because they're elderly, whatever. As long as they have good bone strength and coordination and they're in a stable environment, we shouldn't be hesitant to load this muscle group.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, let's think about walking for a minute. What, mm-hmm. after, how soon do people get up after a hip replacement surgery here in this country?
Immediately. Yep. Immediately. We get them up right away, and if they can, excuse me, poop and pee.
They go home.
They go home. Yep.
They go home the same day.
They go home the same day.
So you have to be safe with your assistive device. Mm-hmm. Most people leave with a walker of some sort mm-hmm. or a wheeled walker, but as long as their GI system is functioning and they're safe, they go home.
Right. Yeah. And if they have stairs in their home, the physical therapist will make sure they can ascend and descend stairs so mm-hmm. they can get safely in and out of their home. Yeah. But those are a very low bar for getting out.
Right. And the other thing is for most people in the United States, this is an elective procedure, mm-hmm. so they plan ahead. So they plan ahead to have someone in the house to help them. They may plan ahead to rent a hospital bed on the mm-hmm. first floor, or they get a commode, things mm-hmm. like that, so they don't have to go up and down the stairs right away. So, they can plan ahead for that, which is also very helpful.
Right.
Before we go to the phones and Dan and Muscadet, I wanted one more question about this. How do we avoid, what preventive measures, let's put it that way, should we take to avoid needing a total hip replacement?
Well, there's many things. First of all, it's maintaining an active lifestyle, maintaining your body mass index at a healthy weight, continuing to perform some sort of resistance training, doing some sort of balance type activities, whether it's Tai Chi or something like that. And then a variety of cardiovascular activity, I think, is kind of key.
Yeah. And some of it is genetic. It's how mm-hmm. well you picked your parents. And sometimes it's inevitable. Or perhaps you've had an accident of some sort. Or mm-hmm. You have congenital hip dysplasia where the sockets are more shallow and you end up there. There are things that are out of our control. But the things that we control, you know, like most things in life related to total body inflammation and joint disease, is exercise and nutrition.
Yep.
Yeah. Makes sense. Dan and Muscadet will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Dan.
Hi there, Larry and Jess. The reason I'm calling is I tore my hamstring back in June, beginning of June. I hobbled around for a couple of weeks, went to the doctor. They told me, yes, I did that. But every once in a while now, I can be walking, and it's like my leg will give out a little bit in that back area. Is it something I should be concerned about, or are there exercises that I can do to help strengthen that?
Feel like your knee buckling, or
not my knees so much. It feels like my leg gets like it pulls itself forward in a sense. Hmm.
Did you have a complete tear, and was it at your buttock area or at your knee area?
At the buttocks area, and terribly black and blue.
Okay. Yeah, so that's what we call a proximal hamstring avulsion, where you pull off that attachment right at that bone that you sit on your sit bone. Can I ask how you did it?
Getting out of a swimming pool, and immediately I tucked and rolled. They thought it hit my head, but no, it's just my hamstring. Both one leg went forward, the other one went back.
Oh, so you slipped?
Pardon me?
You slipped?
Yeah, I slipped.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Because usually just getting out of a swimming pool wouldn't result in that traumatic an injury.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, so it's that eccentric contraction where that's forceful that mm-hmm. pulls off. So did you avulse the bone? Do you know? Or was it a mixed substance?
I went after about 2 weeks because I just hobbled around for the whole week. It was the first day of vacation. I don't know for sure. I don't know if they did any x-rays. I think they just kind of felt it and looked around where the bruising was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But after 3 or 4 weeks, it kind of went away. But now I notice that my leg kind of just goes forward a little bit.
Right. So you've lost one of your kind of key stabilizers on your posterior chain. And what happens a lot of times is that kind of rolls down like a lampshade and you can mm-hmm. get kind of a glob mm-hmm. of knot and scar tissue in that muscle. And you want that muscle to kind of, the fibers to kind of re-along the length of the hamstring. So if you haven't seen a physical therapist, it's still not too late.
No.
I definitely think that would be a good thing to see, to kind of get that tissue to remodel a little bit, strengthen the complementary muscles to make sure this doesn't happen, the right. buckling doesn't happen, because you don't want to fall.
Right. And you may unknowingly be compensating for that tear. You may have subtly changed your gait, et cetera. And so you need them to examine your gait, make sure you're walking normally, and make sure you're firing your hamstrings appropriately during the gait cycle. So there may be some avoidance there that you're not cognitively aware of. So checking in with somebody who can evaluate your gait, evaluate your hamstring flexibility and strength, and set you up on a program to keep you strong and healthy is going to be key.
There you go, Dan. Thank you so much for calling. Taking a look at physical therapy issues on the show today with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're talking physical therapy issues today on the show with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. So great to have them with us. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Dawn emailed, this goes back to the hip pain. Where is hip pain in a so-called bad hip most likely to occur? Would it be on the outside of the hip, or more in the groin area? It sounds like Dawn may be trying to
figure so that out. That's a great question. So typically hip pain refers to the groin. So people will complain of pain kind of deep in their joint. A lot of people will do what we call a C sign, and they'll take their hand like a C clamp, and they'll pinch the front and back of their hip, and they'll say, it's deep in my hip. If these, if my finger and thumb could come together deep, that's where I feel my pain, and that it refers to the groin. Pain on the lateral side of the hip could be greater trochanteric bursitis as a compensation due to a Trendelenburg gait or a limp, or that could be coming from your back.
Yeah, there's a lot of places, but in my experience, primary hip osteoarthritis presents as groin pain.
Yep.
All right. Herb in Boston has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Herb.
Good afternoon. I had a knee replacement about 8 weeks ago, and I had to have another one done on my left knee. And I found a surgeon that uses ablation therapy before the operation to cut down on the pain after the seizure is done. Wonder if you guys have any opinion on that ablation.
Maybe we should talk about what it is.
Is that the genicular nerve?
I know it's to go in and kill the nerves so that you don't experience that pain.
Yeah. Right. So an ablations are done typically in the musculoskeletal world for nerves. I see a lot of people with chronic knee pain who have the genicular nerve ablated to relieve chronic pain. And
does
so
that mean cut off?
Yes.
Basically, they
sever it.
Yeah.
And kind of tie it off. But the genicular nerve doesn't, it's not going to result in weakness.
No. It's just sensory. So thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah.
Yes, we're not
femoral nerve.
Yeah, no, we're not going to result in any weakness. It's just a sensory nerve. So I haven't had any patients who have had it done prior to a knee replacement. That would be that'd be interesting to see. I've just seen people who have chronic knee pain who have had that done as a way to decrease their pain and open up the avenues for physical therapy to be more effective, because sometimes it's the pain that's holding them back. A lot of people don't want to take a lot of narcotics. So, yeah, Herb, didn't have that done the first time, Herb?
No, it's a different surgeon in a different city.
Oh.
And is it okay if I say the name of the city where the other surgeon is that performs it?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's out of Viroqua.
Okay.
I do not know his name.
That's okay.
That's where his office is.
So are you considering having it done with this second total knee?
Yes.
So you're considering having the ablation done with your second total knee when in Viroqua?
Correct.
Okay, well, call us back and let us know.
Yeah, let us know how it goes. We're very interested in this.
Yeah, because you'll have had one total knee without it and one total knee with it.
Yeah. Different surgeons, but that's okay. Yeah.
I'd be really curious.
I'm very curious too. Yeah. So that's a great question, Herb. And, we want to know the answer to that. So when is this scheduled for?
I have not scheduled it yet. I'm trying to make up my mind now.
Okay. Okay. So how's the other one going? You're 8 weeks in and you've decided to switch. You've decided to switch surgeons. So I'm wondering, are things not go well the first time?
It's going good.
Okay. All right.
All right. There we go. So, Herb, after you get it done, call back.
Yeah, call back in about 8 weeks post-op.
Right.
Let's see where you're at and see if it made a difference, if you were able to get through rehab earlier or faster, less pain, although it sounds like this rehab's going well.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe this will accelerate it.
Yeah.
So,
all kinds of reasons why you would go from one to another. It might be insurance, could be anything.
Absolutely. Especially this time of year. People could be switching insurances, things like that.
Sue in Stone Lake, we go to you. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I'm 62 years old, and I'm having some pretty severe pain on the inside of my right knee. So I went in, and they x-rayed both knees. My left knee looks great. My right knee, again, the inside is pretty much bone on bone. There's a bone spur. There's some arthritis showing up in there. And so for now, just to get me through a few things we have in our lives, they did some cortisone in there, but they're recommending a partial knee replacement next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what the benefits of partial over full at my age, is it a good thing to try partial? Should I just do a full right away? So I guess I'd like your opinion on that.
So I'm thrilled that they offered you what we call a unicompartmental knee arthroplasty, meaning that they're only going to replace the compartment that has degenerative changes. So the less we have to take out and put in artificial, the better. Most people, when they get osteoarthritis in their knee, the first compartment to go is that medial compartment on the inside of your knee that you talked about, Sue. And the this will be much less OR time. It'll be a quicker recovery for you. The rehab will be faster. And my understanding is, if in 10 or 15 years down the road, these can be converted successfully into a total knee, from what I've read in the literature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the meantime, make sure you're in as good a shape as you can be in. Maintain as much range of motion and strength as you can, so that when you go into the surgery, you're as healthy, you've maintained your body weight, you've maintained your muscle strength, and that will all help with your recovery.
Mm-hmm.
There you go, Sue. Thank you so much for calling. Chris emailed to ask if hip resurfacing is a good alternative to hip replacement for a 35-year-old female.
Yes, absolutely. If you are a candidate for hip resurfacing, I would strongly encourage that versus a total hip replacement. And a hip resurfacing, basically, I like to say they put a little baseball cap on your femoral head. So there's a lot of what we call bone preservation. So they take out minimal, if any, bone. So you keep your good bone stock. They don't replace the whole femoral head, and they don't stick that that big peg rod all the way down your femoral shaft. You have no hip precautions with it. And again, my understanding is I'm pretty sure these can be converted to a total hip down the road if they need to be. So in this age category, I would 1,000% go with a hip resurfacing.
Right.
If you're a candidate for it, absolutely.
Yeah.
Less is better.
Less is better. Ben in Sparta, what's on your mind?
Hi. I had a question regarding my shoulder and which route I should go down, because I've been hesitant to do much about it, because for the most part I have mostly normal range of motion, but if I have my arm out in any kind of like wing position and it gets pushed back, I just get just immense pain. But I can't point to any like, oh, I hurt it when I did this kind of situation.
So when you say wing position, you mean like chicken wing, like the chicken dance wing position?
Chicken wing, or like hand on the head where it's not like that. If it gets pushed back past like my mid, that side, and it's just that side, that so in that the shoulder itself.
So you're feeling some pain. It's immediate pain when you when your arm gets pushed back.
Yeah, like which I've noticed it mostly. Like I'll be playing with my daughter, and I went to roll on the grass, and it kind of pushed my arm in that motion. Oh boy, that yeah.
Does it feel? Is it painful or does it feel unstable? Like it's sliding around or going to slide out of joint?
Pain.
Okay.
Pain.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen a physical therapist?
Not for this one. On that same arm, I've been having carpal tunnel symptoms. But
Well.
So maybe some relationship here?
It's very much could be.
It's possible. So absolutely. Are you seeing a PT, an OT?
For your carpal tunnel.
For your carpal tunnel?
It was PT, and I haven't seen them in a bit. I went through a regimen, and it felt a little bit better-ish, but then it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my sister, Lori, and I are both looking at each other and just wondering if there's something coming a little bit more centrally mediated, a.k.a. your neck. So the carpal tunnel, the median nerve, is your C6 nerve root, which is a huge nerve root, and it innervates a whole bunch of stuff at your shoulder. Mm-hmm. So the question is there some sort of nerve entrapment, even a little bit more proximal than your wrist, and it's affecting everything.
Or in the shoulder, like a thoracic outlet kind of a thing.
Correct.
So if he's getting pushed back and that, for example, pec minor is really compressing across there. Yeah, so the bottom line is we think you need to go back to PT, and we need somebody to look at both your neck and your shoulder. So part of me thought, well, maybe he's got a little labral tear.
That was my
first
thought.
And when he gets in that position, it's pinching or tweaking that labral tear. You don't have a history of an injury, but it could be degenerative, could be possibly. Is it your dominant arm?
No.
Okay, so less likely, but definitely something that somebody needs to look at and rule out if the carpal tunnel, the shoulder stuff are related, either at the shoulder or at the neck. And Jill wants to say something.
Well, it's interesting that Ben talks about his arm being up like this. Mm-hmm. And historically, we've always thought of those arm elevation tests as being tests to help rule in thoracic outlet. So if you think about all the muscles on the lateral side of your neck that you would be contracting, I'm leaning a little bit more towards thoracic outlet with just the position.
Yeah, although that's also close to a neural tension test too.
And the ulnar nerve is the other classic thoracic outlet syndrome test.
Yeah.
So
the elevated is to go to the PT the way it sounds.
Yeah. She and I we're sorting this out
options.
Here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. In the meantime, Lori and Larry and I are basically doing the chicken dance.
<in our arms. laughs> So I would go back to PT, have them check your shoulder and your neck. Let us know how you do.
Yeah. Thank you, Ben. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Leslie in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. I'm 58 years old. For the last 3 years, I've had some pretty severe knee pain, and I have gone to physical therapy, but nothing has really given me any relief except for cortisone shots, and I only did that one time. And I also had plasma injections, and that unfortunately didn't help at all. So I'm just wondering, the physical therapy that they gave me, the pain is on the outside of my kneecap and also my knees buckle when I walk. And it seems to be worse when I sit around a lot.
Patellofemoral pain.
Right, yeah. But I'm wondering if syndisc would be, or in... because it sounds to me like she's had PRP and a cortisone injection, but we didn't talk about syndisc, and I don't know if that's more for...
I'm wondering if it's not, if it doesn't sound tibiofemoral from what she's saying, it sounds patellofemoral.
Right.
So I don't know about syndisc at the patellofemoral joint. Have they tried a plunger? Did you try a plunger at your kneecap in your PT before?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Did they give you hip strengthening exercises for your knee?
They had me do the clam, and they had me do the bridge, and that sort of thing. And, but they also told me don't do anything that flares it up and causes swelling. And both those flares it up and causes swelling. So I'm really confused as to what the way forward is. Walking. Huh.
So it's swelling? Because primary patellofemoral isn't usually associated with a lot of swelling. Mm-mm. Unless you're getting like a prepatellar bursitis or you have a fat pad thing going on. When they did the cortisone injection, was it into your big knee joint or was it someplace else?
Big knee joint, yeah, both sides.
Huh, both sides. Mm-hmm. And you had some relief from that?
Yes, it was complete relief, but it only lasted, a month or two.
I do that long.
So are they saying that this is arthritis in your knee? What's the diagnosis here? Has anyone given you a diagnosis?
They did not give me a diagnosis, but when I went in for the plasma injection, I said, can you please look at my chart and tell me what I have? And he's like, well, if I had to guess, I would say osteoarthritis.
Okay.
But I don't know.
So if you have osteoarthritis, and if it's not just under your kneecap, mm-hmm. but it's truly in your tibial mm-hmm. femoral joints, considering a Synvisc injection or a hyaluronic acid injection might be the way to go. It doesn't have the negative side effects as of corticosteroid, and it's basically kind of...
Three shots.
It's three shots, yeah. And Larry should be the spokesperson for it because he had surgery scheduled and had it done. And how long ago was that, Larry, that you had that done?
I had the surgery scheduled. Oh, that was several years back.
Right.
Now, yeah. And but then I had the shots. And by a few weeks after the third shot, I called and canceled the surgery, and I haven't been back.
Yeah. And that was 8 or 10 years ago. So,
yeah.
So there is evidence to show that mm-hmm. they're called hyaluronic acid injections. Synvisc is a brand name. Orthovisc is another one. That shows that it is beneficial in the knee, not so much in the hip. So you may want to consider that. And I know we're talking injection, but this may be enough to jumpstart you so you can do good rehab.
Right, so that your rehab helps.
Right.
And the pain with sitting could be primary tibiofemoral OA as well, just patellofemoral.
It could.
Yeah. So if she got a lot of relief from the cortisone injection, it's sounding more like tibiofemoral. But you need more rehab, mm-hmm. then, I mean, the clam and the bridge, those are a good starting point, only.
Yeah.
So
I think she needs some manual therapy, too. Mm-hmm. That would be better to do some distraction of her tibial femoral joint, the plunger like you talked about. So, finding an OCS or an orthopedic clinical specialist, somebody who can really get in there and dig in with their hands might be a good idea.
Yep.
I can tell you the pain went away, and I haven't had any pain ever since.
Yeah. Larry, you should be the spokesperson. I'm mm-hmm. kidding you not.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Leslie, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Jane in Bessemer, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I had surgery on my right rotator cuff and bicep 4 weeks ago, and although I'm trying to be as careful as I can and follow all directions, I am a single mom and a grandmother to a one-year-old. And sometimes accidentally, my arm may be stretched out more than it should be. My question is, how will I know I've done too much with my arm if I re-injured myself?
Mm-hmm. Is there a confession coming, Jane?
Right, exactly. So first of all,
it's very hard for me to stay still.
100%. So did you have a rotator cuff repair? Did they fix your rotator cuff, or did you have a debridement?
Repair.
Okay, and then with your biceps, did they cut it, or what did they do with your biceps?
He just said it was shredded, and I couldn't see the pictures on my last visit
Hopefully they did like a tenodesis on that. So she's got a rotator cuff repair and she's mm-hmm. 4 weeks out. So mm-hmm. How will I know if I've done too much? So first of all, it typically takes a fair amount to, at this point in the game, at 4 weeks, to really pull apart a surgical repair. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean you should be going out and doing cartwheels.
Mm-hmm. It's typically going to be a fast movement.
Correct.
that gets you in trouble. So if you're reaching slowly for something and you feel some pulling, some stretching, you're okay. If you were to fall on an outstretched arm, that would not be good. So it's the quick, sudden movement that's going to cause you the most trouble.
With load.
With load,
So with load, like if you're like,
quickly picking up that one-year-old and swinging it back and forth.
Right. Or reaching to catch the one-year-old if they're losing their balance.
Exactly. So those are the kind of things you need to be cognizant of.
Like Dan, when he slipped and ruptured his hamstring, that quick, loaded, sudden movement, that's what's going to get you.
Right.
Does that help, Jane?
Yes, thank you very, very much.
Appreciate the call. Bradley in Whitewater, your turn. Hi, Bradley.
Yes, hi there. So I'm in the market for a new pair of shoes. I don't run. I just, you know, do life and need a pair of walking shoes. And I was really amazed when I went in. Things have changed a lot in the last, like, year since I bought a pair of shoes. And the ones that I'm seeing now, some of them have an amazing amount of foam that they've added to the sole, or the whole thing is what they call fresh foam or memory foam. Sometimes it seems like as much as 2 inches. And I tried some a pair on, walking around, and yes, it feels very cushy, but I'm just thinking, long term, is this a good thing, or is it going to cause problems?
Oh, that's a lovely question. And, you know, in medicine and in so many things in life, we have these big swings back and forth. So remember, it seems like it wasn't that long ago, we had the barefoot, the minimalist shoes.
Yeah.
People running barefoot, people running in minimalist shoes with no support. And now we've swung the other direction with these giant things on people's feet. Being a middle child myself.
You always got the hand-me-downs?
I got the hand-me-downs, but I'm also like, I swing to the middle. Like, I stay in the middle. Like, to me, 2 inches of foam in the bottom, too much.
Yeah.
You're at a danger of falling off your foam, but we'll set that aside. But I think it's too shock-absorptive for the average person. Now, that being said, if you spend your day walking on concrete... Mm-hmm. If you're working on a factory floor, if you're working somewhere where you are walking for hours on concrete, then having something that's shock absorptive is useful. Not all foam is necessarily shock absorptive. It's just foamy. It doesn't necessarily offload the joints any. So you really need to look for materials that have been shown through engineering kinds of studies to absorb shock.
And our running biomechanist, we have a physical therapist, running biomechanist, and he gets asked this question all the time. And apparently within the running world, and I'm guessing we could apply it to the walking world as well, you shouldn't have to break in a pair of shoes when you leave the store. They should be comfortable. And the higher the price doesn't mean the shoe is better. So you get to kind of a mid-range price, and anything above that, unless, like Lori alluded to, you need it for something very specific, it's not a very good return on your investment. So a $200 shoe is not twice as good as a $100 shoe. So I think Lori's statement is very accurate in that kind of sit middle of the road. And the other option you can always do if you need a little bit more cushion, as long as you have room for it, and you can always buy an off-the-shelf orthotic and take out whatever the orthotic is in the shoe and add a little bit more cushion that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Especially if you need a little bit of arch support or something like that.
And I'm glad you mentioned the walking on concrete versus walking on the... Because I was thinking about my own case where a few years back with daughter Emily and her cross country, most of my walking is on pavement, but then the pair of shoes I had running,
cross country course,
running the cross country course is sort of unstable. It's not, I got a different pair of shoes.
That makes perfect sense.
It was unsteady.
Right. Well, and you think about a lot of factory workers who are on concrete all day, typically they have to wear steel-toed work boots.
Yeah.
And so for many of those people, you accommodate things by putting an insole on the inside because you can't do things to the soles on the outside. So you have to think, you have to kind of be creative.
There you go, Bradley. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our physical therapist, with us today. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show, we'll hear from Lake Mills veterinarian Bill Stork. He's going to be talking about sharing do's and don'ts regarding traveling with your pets. And then we'll talk about reptiles as pets with Bill Stewart from WPS Reptiles in Kenosha. Right now, we are taking a look at physical therapy issues, and Gary in Milwaukee has a question for our guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Gary, what's on your mind?
Hello. Well, it's not really a question, but an earlier caller called in with a dilemma as to whether or not to get a partial replacement on her knee or a full. And I thought I would weigh in on that conversation with my own experience. Back in 2005, I got a partial. I got a couple of opinions on it, and one doctor said, don't do it. You're going to need a full eventually anyway. But another doctor said, yeah, let's do it, and so I did it. 4 years later, I was back in for a full in 2009, and actually I was in quite a bit of pain by then again. And it was a messier surgery than it would have needed to be with the scar tissue that was in place from the earlier surgery. The big difference is that I was in my late 40s when I had this first surgery done. I believe the caller from Stone Lake was in her mid-60s.
58.
And so, yeah, so the best I can, I mean, from my own personal experience, I may have to have a replacement on my right knee eventually. I will not get a partial. I will get a full. Actually,
okay. Yeah, thanks for calling, Gary. Comment on that, Jill?
So I 100% understand what you're saying, Gary, and I would say that the advancements in the surgery for a unicompartmental knee replacement have changed dramatically in 20 years. So that was 20 years ago, and now we have this robot-assisted, and I would say the advancements in the technology have improved considerably. And that may, because they're less invasive, cut down on the scar tissue that Gary was talking about. He had so much scar tissue afterwards.
And at this point, you know, I'm not sure what your age is, but the total joint replacement may be the best surgery for you at this point in time. And in your 40s, you know, you really don't want to go with the total joint if you don't have to, especially in 2005. Because it's not gonna last your lifetime. And to take down a total knee is unpleasant.
Right.
Is what I've been told. So
and this is Gary brings up an excellent point though. As our society is aging, total joints are one of the biggest elective musculoskeletal surgeries performed. I don't know if it's in the world, but
the biggest. I think it is the biggest
in the United States. So, as a consequence, I would say they're constantly trying to develop better procedures, better materials, better stabilization, because this is getting to be, unfortunately, so commonplace in our society.
And when you say elective surgery, do you mean surgery that is not covered by insurance?
No. Surgery that you choose to do as compared to surgery you have to do, for example.
From a car accident.
Yeah.
Okay. Or falling down a flight of stairs and I dislocated my shoulder, now I need it. So with an elective surgery, it's time. We talked about bad days outweighing good days. Let's find a good time that I can have the surgery performed. Okay. My daughter can come and help me, things like that.
And, in the category of progress, we just got notice at UW that the standard hip precautions, flexion past 90, internal rotation, across the body, they're out
gone.
The window.
They're gone.
And so in my entire career, which has now spanned close to 40 years.
Decades.
Many decades. Right. These hip precautions have been in place and they are going away.
Absolutely.
So again, progress.
Right.
Not only in the surgical technique, but now because surgery, you know, for whatever reason, the hip precautions are going away.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things we grill in our PT students, which will no longer be a test question.
Right. No longer be a test question, exactly.
But Gary brings up, this is a really good point for us to have this conversation. So
thank you for sharing. I'm really glad that he called.
Yeah.
So we could talk about this. That's
absolutely
awesome.
Thanks,
and good
Gary.
Luck with your next one, Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you for calling. Alice in Maple, your turn. Hi, Alice.
So, hi, thank you. About a week ago, a little less, I was on a trail run and I tripped on a root and fell on my I put my arm out and fell on it and dislocated it.
Your shoulder?
My shoulder. And I had to walk about a mile back a little bit more, just like hanging my arm, because I could feel it was like in my armpit.
Mm-hmm.
And after about half an hour, it went back into place.
Excellent.
And I did go to urgent care for ortho 3 days later, and they said that, yeah, it was in good place again. But I have a little fracture of the glenoid posterior.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, and I can't get into physical therapy for like 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm using it, like, because I'm active. I have horses and I'm doing firewood and things, but I try to use my left arm mainly. But I am using my right arm as tolerated. I'm wondering if I can injure it.
Oh, that's a great question. So my guess is that fracture that they're seeing is a Hill Sachs lesion.
Yes.
Right, would be my guess if it's on the...
But it's usually on the humeral head.
That's right, the humeral head. Yeah.
So she could have just chipped off a little bit of her
right.
glenoid, and it's
right.
probably a stable, probably
right.
had an intra-articular fracture.
Right.
Alice, can I ask how old you are?
71.
All right.
Not a girl.
Yep, exactly. You go, girl.
Yeah.
So can you injure it? Not likely.
Right. So,
yeah.
And part of the reason I asked her age is because typically... with younger people, we see a bigger risk of redislocations, things like that. And in Alice's demographic, she's probably a little bit more stable. So I wouldn't worry as much about her feeling unstable. And I agree with you, Alice. I think doing gentle, easy range of motion, making sure that you can move it so you don't get a frozen shoulder, which you are in the demographic for, would be really good.
Yeah, somehow I don't see it with her lifestyle.
100%.
Cutting
wood and trail running.
Right,
yeah.
Right. The most likely thing to happen in an older person, not elderly, you are not elderly, in an older person, if is a rotator cuff tear.
Yeah.
So if you dislocate, you're less likely to re-dislocate, but more likely to have torn your rotator cuff. So just use it, whatever feels comfortable, and CPT when you get in. And you may wave at them, and they may say, awesome,
you look great.
Let's check your rotator cuff strength.
Yeah.
And thanks, Alice. And speaking of rotator cuffs, Dan in Madison has a quick question, I believe, relating to it. Dan,
about a year ago, September of last year, I was in a motorcycle accident. And I was in ICU for a couple days. Anyway, after I got out, I noticed my shoulder was really sore. I talked to my doctor. They said, I think I tore my rotator cuff. They said, no, you didn't. Anyway, long story short, I got an MRI. I have had a partial tear of my rotator cuff. The physical therapist at the time said, well, you know, you really don't need surgery. We can do surgery, but it's probably going to be a longer recovery. That I could do a cortisone injection, but that actually makes it weaker. So they gave me physical therapy. I did the physical therapy. I wasn't religious about it like I should have been, but my shoulder actually started feeling better. Then about a month ago, I was riding motorcycles again, and just I didn't crash or anything, but I had to lift my bike up this off-road riding, and I seemed to have re-injured that rotator cuff. It feels about the same as it did before. And I'm just wondering if I should just start doing the physical therapy that I was doing before again.
Yes.
For sure. And to be honest, Dan, I would, it sounds to me like you kind of self-graduated from PT or decided kind of when you were done. If you're going to be having to lift a motorcycle, I would not only do really good rotator cuff strengthening, but get a really good strengthening program in general as a preventative so you don't constantly kind of keep re-aggravating this rotator cuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you're going to be doing, I would make cuff exercises kind of like dental flossing. I think you need to do it on a regular basis, and then I'd add some other strengthening too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep. Dan, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today as we talk physical therapy issues. They'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on WPR News, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Physical therapy on our minds. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody back with us today. What questions do you have? You can give a call at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. Let's take a call from Martha in Kenosha. Martha, thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I have an adverse reaction to an osteoporosis drug, Fosamax. I'm wondering if the physical therapists have any information or experience with that. I took 9 doses once a week. I've talked to my rheumatologist, and he agrees that the pain in my knees, the swelling in my knees, and the heaviness in my legs is a response to that. I'm wondering, it keeps me awake at night, and I'm wondering if they have any advice about what to do.
So let's just roll the tape back a second. You said your rheumatologist told you that?
Yeah.
Are you
Yeah.
also being treated for a rheumatologic condition?
No, I went to him because I was reluctant to start on Fosamax anyhow, and my bone density showed that I needed that kind of medication.
So you didn't go back to your osteoporosis doctor and discuss an alternative medication to the Fosamax?
Yes.
Have you done that?
No, I haven't started on anything else.
Okay, but you are going to change something up for your osteoporosis?
I'm just reluctant because they're all long lasting. You know, they last a year. One dose lasts a year. And if I have more problems,
I see.
Then I'll have these side effects for a long time till it wears off.
So the short acting gave you had a negative side effect. So you're concerned about the longer ones. Okay. Martha, are you on some sort of program from an exercise perspective to increase your bone mineral density in addition to taking this medication?
Yes, I tried to get 2 miles of walking in. I have a treadmill. My husband's in a wheelchair, so we do a lot of doctor's appointments with, you know, pulling that in and out of the back of the car. I have a lot of flowers to take care of, and so I'm really pretty active.
Okay, so I think it would be useful, particularly if you're not going to be taking any medication for your osteoporosis, to talk with a nutritionist to make mm-hmm. sure you're getting sufficient nutrition to support your bone health. I also think you should see a physical therapist to get set up on a program to strengthen your bones. So walking is only one activity. It will strengthen your bones in a specific way. It will not strengthen them in other ways. So we talk about having odd forces, that is moving in different directions, dancing being sort of a classic example, where you move in a variety of different ways so that you load your bones differently. So doing the same activities, even if you are active, is not sufficient to maintain your bone health. So seeing a physical therapist to getting set up on a good structured program, or potentially even joining a class mm-hmm. that does exercises specifically designed to address your osteoporosis, as well as meeting with a registered dietitian to discuss nutrition to support your bone health.
And the other thing is, just like anything else, your body starts accommodating something. So if you do the same walking distance every day and the same pace, eventually your body's going to say, well, I don't need to lay down any more bone because you're not testing me in different ways. And so you need what we call muscle confusion or bone confusion. It has to be used in so many different ways, variety. Like Lori said, so walking the same amount, eventually you will have diminished returns on your investment on your bone mineral density.
Things to think about, Martha.
Yeah,
thanks a lot. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Jay in Loganville, your turn. Hi, Jay.
Hi. I'm 66 years old, and I've developed neuropathy in my feet and my left foot. It's worse than the right, but in the summer it's not as huge an issue, but in the winter I even have to go so far as I soak my feet in warm water, or even wear heated socks. And I just wonder if there's some other relief for neuropathy. I do notice that in my muscles in my calf, they're just like pulsating. It's like there's an alien inside my calf. And I wondered if that's also some significance to this neuropathy.
And the neuropathy is?
Idiopathic. In most cases, it's idiopathic. We don't know what causes it. It is
pain.
It's generally pain. Sometimes people get burning. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people get tingling and numbness. Sometimes people feel like they're walking on pebbles. Sometimes people can't feel their feet at all. It presents in a number of different ways, all of them neurologically based. So numbness, tingling, burning, pain, pressure, you name it. Unfortunately, there is no treatment for it. So we help people manage their symptoms. So Jay mentioned that he soaks them in warm water. I see a number of people who come to the warm water pool to exercise because many times people are unable to exercise on land because of the symptoms in their calves and in their feet. It's just too painful for them. So they can exercise in the pool, and that warm water and the hydrostatic pressure on their feet helps with their pain. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the best mm-hmm. that we can do.
Yeah, there you go, Jay. Thank you for calling. Margaret in Fox Cities, your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. So I had a hip replacement on the left side on October 1st, and at the same time, the surgeon did what he called a significant repair of a tendon. And so when I saw him last Tuesday, he was saying everything's going well with the hip repair, but that I still can only do 50% weight bearing on the left leg because of the tendon repair. I see him again on November 12th, and I'm just wondering, after November 12th, which would be 6 weeks out, what can I expect in terms of being able to not need my walker and so on?
Well, you're only 50% weight bearing right now, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay, so we're going to keep you at 50% weight bearing until you see him in November. He'll probably allow you to go full weight bearing, but with an assistive device for a little bit. And so you'll still probably be on your walker for, my guess is, a few weeks, then maybe progress to a cane of some sort. The biggest thing will be making sure that you have adequate strength and balance. And because, unfortunately, right now, Margaret, you're unable to do fully weight-bearing activities on that leg because of the tendon repair, it's just going to slow everything down a little bit because you haven't had that foot on the ground. You don't have that input from your foot. Your balance will be off.
Well, if she's 50% weight-bearing, she should be putting her foot down and putting
some
weight on it.
Some,
yeah.
But
so what's,
not single-leg stuff.
Not single-leg stuff, yep, you're right. I think what's important now is to try to walk as normally mm-hmm. as possible, even though you're only putting half your weight on that leg. So heel down, roll onto the ball of your foot, bend your knee, straighten your knee out as you take that step. Try to make your gait symmetrical left to right without putting all of your weight on it. Are you able to do that at this point? Does it feel comfortable walking?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I mainly say to myself when I'm stepping on my left foot, push down on the walker with my arms.
Great.
To
okay.
Put that.
And is there a plan to send you to physical therapy?
I am already in physical therapy, but they say, you know, we pretty much, I'm still going once a week, but they say until he clears me to use both legs, they kind of exhausted the range of different things they can do.
The other option would be a pool. Right. They mm-hmm. are correct, Margaret. The other option would be if there's a pool where you mm-hmm. could do some walking or some activities there, because that you could do that and respect your weight-bearing restrictions.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Although she may be too close to surgery yet in terms of her incision
100%.
To get in the pool.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
So she is kind of in that little bit of that holding pattern. Yep.
Yep.
Margaret, good luck. Thank you for calling. Willow in Madison, your turn. Hi, Willow.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Early last year, I went to Orlando, and I spent about 6 weeks there, and I would do walking every morning. After about a week or so, I felt my lower legs below my knees there, this jiggling sensation. I didn't pay attention to it until about a week later, after a shower, I looked down, and they were all swollen. Both were swollen, along with the top of my feet and my toes, and also my forearms, all swollen. My daughter took me to a hospital there, Advent Health, and they did a series of tests, urinalysis, blood tests, checked my heart, and all they could tell me was, take it easy with the walking and keep your feet elevated, which I did. After a while, it didn't help, so I came back to Madison, and I went to my doctor here at UW, and they did the same test plus some more, and they couldn't give me a definitive answer. And the swelling eventually went away. Along with that, I don't know if they're related, but I have enlarged prostate, and I'm due for surgery later on this month. Mm. Is there an answer to what caused the swelling?
Well, let's see. You've been to two medical institutions who have run a battery of tests, and they haven't come up with anything.
I'm just trying to think. Yeah. Gravity dependent. Is there some sort of right. fluid? The reason it would end up in all extremities mm-hmm. in that dependent distal. Position.
Yeah. So it makes you think that there's not a good venous return.
Right.
But I would expect that somebody would have checked that, because it seems like that would be the obvious
correct.
Answer, like
the
a
lowest hanging
cardiac,
fruit. The lowest
a cardiac
hanging fruit.
Issue. Yeah. And so I'm guessing they checked his heart and so on. So.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Willow, did you try any compression socks or compression garments? And if so, did that make a difference?
I did, both in my lower legs and my arms.
And?
And it appeared it helped.
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, I wonder vascular. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking vascular, is there a problem with the valves?
Mm-hmm.
Or lymph?
Lymphedema. Lymphedema. Some sort, like lymphatic mm-hmm. drainage issues.
Lymphatic drainage
issues.
Well,
that's interesting. Yeah.
So I don't know. It could be something with your lymph system, because that's something that we see. And I don't know what the underlying cause of that would be in your case.
Either.
But we do have a physical therapist at the spine clinic at Research Park that specializes in lymph. There's also an OT, I believe, who does lymph work. So that'd be another avenue to look at.
Mm-hmm.
But first you have a surgery coming up. So, you know, start with that and then see. So have you had the swelling again? It happened that one time. Has it happened again?
Yes, but not as severe. Just slight swellings, and they go away by themselves.
Huh. Mm-hmm. All right. I don't know. So it might be interesting to get a referral to see the physical therapist
right.
who specializes in lymph and see if they have anything to add to this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Good luck, Willow. Thank you for calling. Brad emailed to say he had an RT laparoscopic inguinal hernia surgery in mid-May. The hernia is corrected, but they are still experiencing pain around the groin area of the surgery. Are there exercises that Brad can do to help with the pain?
So if Brad has not seen a physical therapist, I would
be.
Definitely, just because of all of the fascial layers, I'm guessing it was probably done arthroscopically, mm-hmm. but all of the fascia that they have to go through to do an inguinal repair, that can get so tight.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing a physical therapist to increase the mobility between all those fascial layers would be the first place I would start.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I'd add in a strengthening program. But I'm guessing
yeah.
mobility is probably
right.
the number
that
one
would
problem.
That would be my guess as well.
Yeah.
Suzanne in Little Chute, hearing back from you, I believe.
Hi. I had called in a couple of months ago about I have Pellegrini Stida syndrome,
mm-hmm.
and I had told you at that time I had a total of 3 cortisone shots, and then I did go to about 6 weeks of physical therapy, and some of what they did help, like patellar molds and some adductor stretching, but ultimately it just made the pain worse. as I tried, and we tried together to strengthen everything, like squats and abduction, just made it worse. So I went back and had another MRI, or had an MRI previously to just send x-rays. So I'm scheduled to have surgery in about 10 days or so, and what he plans to do is remove the calcification in the medial collateral ligament, and I also have some severe arthritis in the patellar region, and he's going to try to scrape that up.
Clean it up, yeah. Mm-hmm. So okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you tried the conservative route as best you could, and with the Pellegrina Staita, that's that calcific mass in your MCL. So basically it's kind of like a bony block where there mm-hmm. shouldn't be one, which would affect your gait mechanics, mm-hmm. things like that. So they're going to remove that, and then they're going to do what I call a shave and a haircut and mm-hmm. clean up any loose bodies or anything under your patellofemoral joint.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll need really good rehab yeah. after that. The exercises will probably be somewhat similar to what you're doing now, but should feel a heck of a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just, I think one of the big cautions would be the patellofemoral joint. So that
correct.
Clean up under there could cause some pain in the front of your knee and some quadriceps avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
So getting on a really good rehab program for your quadriceps will be really important after the surgery.
And using a plunger. So Lori talked about a plunger earlier, and we never really followed up with what that is.
Yeah.
But a company makes them. They're very small. They look like plungers that you would use for your kitchen sink.
Mm-hmm.
And you put an ultrasound gel or some sort of medium.
Vaseline
works great around the rim. And then literally you put it over your kneecap and then you pull up. So as physical therapists, we like to mobilize the kneecap, and we can do up and down. We can do superior and inferior and side to side. But so many people with mm-hmm. patellofemoral pain, I just want somebody to lift my kneecap up and unload it. And that's what the plunger does. So when you go see your PT, ask them if they can plunge your knee.
There we go. Thank you for calling. Ron in La Crosse. Hi.
Yes. I just wonder if the physical therapists that are your guests ever heard of something called the Earth Sole. It's basically a pair of shoes. I bought a pair in the 70s where the thickest part of the sole is in the front mm-hmm. and not under the heel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I do have scoliosis, it's been so long since I found a new pair, but I just wonder, would having a reverse sole, you know, the thicker part in the front of the shoe be beneficial for anybody with back problems?
Oh, that is such an individual question.
Right.
And I just had like a flashback because I had those
shoes. I did too. I bought them on State Street when I moved
nice.
Here in the 90s.
Oh my
gosh. So they were
still around. Yes, yes, yes. So as we said earlier, when Bradley called about shoes, like things swing, you know, let's do the Earth shoes where the heel is lower. You get a nice stretch of your Achilles tendon. So I tell you, if you go from that thick 2-inch sole to an Earth shoe, you're going right. to be back in with Achilles tendinopathy. So a decision about shoes is very individual, like a straight last, a curve last, mm-hmm. a stiff sole, a flexible sole. I cannot make a generalization
right.
other than to say you need the shoe that fits your case.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be why you see a physical therapist or mm-hmm. someone who specializes in orthotics or shoes or so on, who can advise you. So
mm-hmm.
if you have scoliosis, there's a chance you're asymmetrical in the frontal plane and you may have one leg that appears longer than the other. So you might need a lift in one shoe and not the other shoe, as an example. So great question.
Right.
I love the shoe questions, but I can't make a global statement that there is one kind of shoe that's better for everybody.
Right.
Great question, Ron.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ron. Tom emailed to ask what precautions are no longer necessary for hip replacements that we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier, and where can Tom find out about the procedure?
So with a posterolateral approach, which is the most common approach, you were to avoid hip flexion to 90 degrees.
Past 90 degrees.
Adducting or kind of squeezing your legs together.
Or crossing your legs over the other.
Crossing your legs over the other, and then internal rotation. So the big thing would be to be like across your surgical leg, up and over your non-surgical leg. That would that combination mm-hmm. of flexion mm-hmm. and adduction mm-hmm. yeah. Was the problem child for many people. And it put you at risk of dislocation was my understanding. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps the components have improved such that that risk is
you know, as I said to my patients when, you know, sometimes they'd be 6 months out and they're, I can't flex past 90. And I'd say, you know, A, you're 6 months out. And B, I always felt like it was the combination
yes.
of flexion, internal rotation, and adduction that got you in trouble, not any one of those components in isolation. Where can you find more information? You can look at UW Health site and look at hip replacement. You can go to the AAOS, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. You can probably go to the Mayo Clinic website. Any WebMD. Of those, WebMD, all those will have information on total hip replacements.
Mm-hmm.
Jane emailed to ask, what are potential risks for a person having a spinal fusion and scoliosis to undergo hip replacement? So she has spinal fusion mm-hmm. and scoliosis. What about a hip replacement?
So if she's already got her spine fused at multiple levels and now she's having a hip replacement, it she'll just have to be very cognizant about where she gets her mobility from because, you know, if you're having your hip replaced, all of us can bend really well and wiggle through our spine. Jane can't do that because her spine is fused. And so she would just need to be very cognizant of the fact that she's going to have to be careful how she moves the first few weeks.
Right. But she may feel better because her hip may move better than it did
Absolutely.
Before her surgery. So once she recovers from the acute surgical event, she may find that she's doing better. I would highly recommend Jane get in a pool for her rehab mm-hmm. because of the asymmetries that happen with scoliosis and so on, and because of the position sometimes they're put in during surgery,
right.
It can flare up somebody's back. So recovering in a pool where you can decompress the spine at the same time mm-hmm. is often a good advice.
Right.
And finally, Cody just wanted to share that one thing he wished he'd known prior to getting a knee replacement in their mid-40s. The body, being younger, the body wants to heal, and that can create scar tissue quickly.
Yeah, right.
The med femur tourniquet during the surgery can cause hamstring and quadricep problems or damage.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. yep.
And don't hesitate to complement physical therapy with massage and or acupuncture.
Absolutely.
All good points mm-hmm. to
great
end
tips.
On.
All great tips. You
Very
bet.
Very good.
You bet.
And thank you both. You'll be back in a month and we'll do this again.
Sounds great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks to those great callers.
Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW Madison. They'll be back in a month and we'll do this all over again. And coming up, we'll talk with a doctor who just underwent knee replacement surgery and find out what it's like to be on the other end of things. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. After a 40-year career, an orthopedic surgeon underwent knee surgery himself. And as he recovers, he's more convinced than ever of the importance of physical therapy and rehab. We're joined by Dr. John Orwin, a retired orthopedic surgeon in Madison. He retired in 2021 from Unity Point Health Meritor at University of Wisconsin Hospitals. Still teaches orthopedic residents at the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison. And as we talk with Dr. Orwin, I hope you'll join in. Have you ever wished your doctor or surgeon could walk a day in your shoes? Would it help to know your physician had undergone the same procedure as you, maybe? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Dr. John Orwin, thank you for joining us.
You bet. Thank you.
I understand you're currently at home recovering from knee replacement surgery. How are you doing?
Well, yeah, I had my surgery last Tuesday, and really the amazing thing still to me is that when I was training back in the 80s, when we would do an operation like this, you would spend typically 7 to 10 days in the hospital. I actually had this done as an outpatient. I was home that night, and it's I'm still kind of in shock how uneventful it's been, and I'm obviously just a case of one here, so it's hard to – everybody's not going to have the same kind of results necessarily in the first week that I'm having, but I'm very, very happy. I'm not having much pain, and I'm already on the road to recovery, already having had two therapy sessions. In fact, I just got home from my second therapy session about a half an hour ago.
Well, now you've had a long career as a surgeon. What was it like for you as a patient undergoing knee surgery?
Well, I'd had surgeries before, orthopedic surgeries. I think the thing that got me interested in orthopedics when I was younger was I had had the index surgery on my right knee back literally 51 years ago, and was, to be honest with you, it was a real struggle. I had more trouble with that surgery in the first week than I've had at all with this surgery. And obviously, 50 years makes a big difference in terms of how we did the surgery and things like that. But I just remember the thing that made me recover, or really helped me recover, was how hard I worked in physical therapy afterwards. In fact, I had it done in December, and I was back playing competitive tennis by the end of March. And back in those days, with an open procedure as opposed to an arthroscopic procedure, that was unheard of. And I think the reason I did well was I really worked hard, and I had a phenomenal therapist who really worked me hard and motivated me to get back to doing what I wanted to do.
Well, you've already, and as you say, you've already started physical therapy, had a couple of sessions. How important to your recovery will it be to follow through with this physical therapy?
Oh, I've said this to years. I said this to all my patients over the years that I treated patients. Is you know, the surgery, when we do surgery, is important. But in my mind, the thing that gets you functionally back to what you want to do is all the rehab. And when I saw patients, I would see patients sometimes, in a second opinion, and they were concerned about why they weren't doing well. And more often than not, it wasn't that the surgery had gone poorly or something didn't happen the way you wanted it to happen, but it was that the patients, it wasn't stressed to the patients how important the physical therapy is. So the onus, as far as I'm concerned, is on me to work hard. And believe me, I understand the drill. I've worked with people like Lori and Jill and my whole career. In fact, I was blessed because I surrounded myself with phenomenal therapists. And I think that's honestly why a lot of my patients did very well. So I will be the best patient in the world. My wife might not agree with that, but I will be the best patient in the world because of how hard I work in physical therapy.
And Lori and Jill brightened up when they learned that you were going to be following them today because they enjoy working with you, probably because you've leaned on your patients to get their proper physical therapy. As you said, the surgery is quite a bit different from the one you had 50 years ago.
Right. Well, as an example, I had back 50 years ago, what we did back then when I had a meniscal tear in my knee. I was a high school senior and my knee was locking up. So I didn't tear my ACL or anything like that. And I had an open meniscectomy because we didn't do arthroscopy then. So in the early 70s, you couldn't get an arthroscopic knee procedure. Now, you could have an arthroscopic meniscectomy and literally with a good therapist or athletic trainer working with you would be back within 4 to 6 weeks doing most of your activities, maybe a little longer if you're doing an elite sport. It literally, because I had this big long incision in my knee, I spent 5 days in the hospital. It was the most, I'll be honest with you, it was one of the most traumatic things I ever went through in my entire life. This surgery now, with the way we do things, obviously the surgery's different. Now they're actually removing my entire knee and putting in a new knee with plastic and metal and things like that. But it's using the same incision, but our anesthesia's better, our pain management's better. Those are the reasons why, you know, you can do this and do it as an outpatient. And I think, you know, you'll feel better when you're at home as opposed to being in the hospital. It's not for everybody, obviously, but if you have a good situation at home with people who can help you and your pain is well controlled, which early on, which mine was, then you can do something like this as an outpatient.
And we'll let our listeners join in. If you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share, I hope you join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Hart in Baraboo, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Larry, thanks for a great topic. I had my left knee replaced 8 years ago, and my surgeon and friends had always told me, make sure you do your rehab. Make sure you do your rehab well. It might hurt initially, but keep to it, and don't give up, and just practice and practice and practice. And I can tell you that my left knee has just been wonderful, pain-free, and great surgeon at UW, and a great physical therapist, a young lady who has just graduated from Mayo at my local hospital in Baraboo, St. Clair's. And it just, I had put the surgery off for about 5 to 6 years because I was working full-time, and I knew it was going to be very difficult to do the rehab while I was working, especially 60, 70 hours a week. But long story short, the rehab was terrific and takes some effort, but it's just a wonderful feeling to have a very strong left knee, and I'm getting ready to do my right knee in early 25. So great topic.
Oh, Hart, thanks a lot. Dr. Irwin, a comment?
Well, no, I mean, you're a perfect example of how you obviously were pointed in the right direction in terms of how to get yourself better, and especially after surgery. And the hard work pays off. It's not always fun. Sometimes physical therapists get labeled pain and torturous instead of physical therapy, and because it can be sore. And, you know, a good therapist is going to really pay close attention to how you're doing. Sometimes you can go a little faster than others. Sometimes you go a little slower. But it's never a race. A good therapist is going to look at you and say, okay, look at what your goals and objectives are, and then set a plan, and then you work with the plan. And the plan can always change. That's okay. One of the things I think is interesting is, yeah, I don't know if I could have ever done this while I was practicing. I don't know if I would ever had the time. I would have literally probably taken 4 to 6 months off to work if I was going to really dedicate the time to doing the rehab. So, yeah, being retired is a lot easier to being able to do all this because you have the time spent where you can spend really doing what you need to do in terms of the rehab issues and stuff. Well, that's great.
Yeah. And your kind of job, you're on your feet. When you were working, you were on your feet all the time.
Right. Yeah. And interestingly, Mike, you know, I could have probably done this 6, 8 years ago. And one of the things I did was I lost some weight. I lost like 60 pounds. And I had tried a lot of other things to settle my knee down. And my biggest problem really is just being up on my feet all day long. Before this, I could ride a bike. In fact, a month before I did this, we rode our bikes through Europe for a week. And so the riding wasn't an issue. It wasn't hard riding, but what was an issue was just walking around these little towns, you know, when you're going to all the museums and things like that. And I had more discomfort and problems with that than I did with some of the functional stuff. But like if I wanted to work in my shop, I couldn't work in my shop and stand up all day long because my knees would just ache. And so there was functional issues and pain issues. Some people have obviously a lot of pain. I wouldn't tell you my pain was terrible pain. But it was combined the pain with the functional impairment, you know, after waiting another 5-6 years after I lost all that weight, it was the right time for me to do it.
Yeah. Jan in Door County, we'll go to you now. Hi, Jan. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for listening to or talking with me. I had a right knee replaced a year ago. And prior to my surgery here at Door County Medical Center, I had a treatment called Iovera. And the Iovera was a nerve block that went around my knee. It wasn't the simplest procedure I've had, but it certainly allowed me after surgery to reduce, if I used any narcotics at all, to deal with pain.
Oh.
2 days later, it was an outpatient. 2 days after surgery, I began 3 days a week of physical therapy at the rehab center up here. And within 6 weeks, I had no problems, walked out, and flew back to my home in Florida.
Oh. Jan, thank you for calling. Comment on that, especially on that treatment beforehand, Dr. Orwin.
You know, I don't really I don't know that treatment. I'll be honest with you. I'm assuming it was something to try to help desensitize her knee to maybe take it out of the or take it down a notch or pain level down a notch. You know, before the surgery, or she was really impaired. And I'll be honest with you. I wasn't a primary knee surgeon. Certainly a joint surgeon, a total joint surgeon before in my normal practice. I was primarily a shoulder surgeon and a sports doc. So I don't know of that. I know there are different modalities that can be used to help desensitize certain joints that make them, you know, more tolerable. And if this allowed her, I mean, it makes sense. If it allowed her to be more functional and do a little, almost what we call prehab, and I'm sure Jill and Lori have talked about that in the past, you know, where you do a little bit of rehab before your surgery to kind of prepare the joint for the surgery, then it could be quite helpful. And in her case, obviously, it's made a big difference.
Yeah. Jan, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, and I hope you will, with your own experiences or your own questions. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email totalk@WPR. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking today with Dr. John Orwin, a retired orthopedic surgeon in Madison, who, along a distinguished career, still teaches orthopedic residents at William S. Middleton Memorial Vet Hospital in Madison, and has just undergone himself some surgery, and really wanted to highlight some of the positive outcomes if you follow the physical therapy and rehab suggestions that you're given before and after the surgery itself. Dr. Orwin, someone emailed in, what kinds of questions should patients be asking their surgeons before and after?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different ways to get information nowadays, and so obviously you can get information from your surgeons and or their colleagues that are working with them in the clinical setting, be it the nurses and the physician assistants, and even some of the residents. If you're in a program like the University of Wisconsin, where you're working with residents and fellows, you know. There's so much information out there. It's so hard to decipher what's valuable and what isn't. You can get a lot of stuff on the internet. the University of Wisconsin, Medical College of Wisconsin, Mayo Clinic, all these big programs have a lot of information where you can get basic answers. You know, a lot of the questions I asked pre-op, I actually asked my other colleagues who do total joints about some of the things because since I didn't do total joints in my career, I did a lot of them in my training, but that was 35 to 40 years ago, and so a lot has changed. And as much as we keep up on all this information, a lot changes. And so I ask a lot of technical questions, more for my own satisfaction because I'm a surgeon and I think the technical stuff is interesting. But, you know, everybody has different concerns. You know, asking questions like how much pain am I going to be in? How are you going to modify or help me with the pain? You know, what are the things I'm going to be worried about? I think one of the things that really helps a lot of patients is to talk to their friends or family or people they know that have had a similar procedure. And then they get an idea like what went well or what didn't go well. And then they can go in and talk to their physician about those types of things. You know, maybe you had a great surgery, but the anesthesia was horrible. Or you had more complications, you know, more problems with nausea and things like that with the anesthesia. And for some people, it's really their first big operation. And so they don't know what to expect. So I think it's really important to ask questions. Ask as many as you need to. Try to get the answers. You may not like all the answers, but try to get the answers. And you ask them from a lot of people that have had the experience. And, you know, a lot of your friends and family may have had similar procedures. So getting their input can be very, very valuable.
Let's go to Ariane in Mayville. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I just wanted to make a quick comment that this segment that I'm listening to with my mom, who were preparing for a knee replacement in 2 weeks. She had her hip done about 6 months ago. The information you guys are providing has kind of helped her put her mind at ease. She just got approved for, I believe the lady, the first, other caller said Iovan. Yes, it is a procedure. It's a number of shots that go up and down the knee, and it keeps your knee numb for up to 2 to 3 months after the surgery is what we were told. It aids in the pain of recovery. So that was the comment I wanted to make, and I just wanted to say thank you because this segment has been so incredibly helpful today.
Oh, well, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, and thanks for...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and good luck.
Yeah, good luck with your... Good luck, Mom. She's listening. Good luck to you, and I'm hoping it goes well, and I'm sure it will. Thank you, Ariane. Sonia in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Sonia.
Hi. Yeah, Larry, Doctor, my daughter in June had an MCL repair and has participated in therapy, has gone twice a week, is working on rehab as well independently. She's 17, so she's pretty young. It was a sports-related injury. But it seems to be progressing slowly despite all the intervention.
Hmm. Under those kind of circumstances, when things don't seem to be going as well as they should, Dr. Orwin, what do you suggest?
Well, I think a lot here a lot of it really depends on what's progressing slowly. You know, hopefully at this point in time, she has full range of motion of her knee, and she should be working, you know, on the functional, basic strengthening and then the functional strengthening of her knee. So if she's having complications in that, or maybe she's not getting her knee motion back, that could certainly slow down her ability to progress. So a lot of it depends on, what's actually happening and why everybody thinks it's slow. Now, I will tell you, except for real simple knee surgeries, any kind of repair or reconstruction like that, It's going to require a good 6 months before you're back to doing your certainly running, jumping activities. You might be doing things in a pool or other activities like that. Sometimes when things are not going as smoothly as you would like or your perception was what they were going to be like, it's nice that a lot of times the therapist will get another therapist involved to sit, to get another pair of eyes on the on your, in this case, your daughter, to get a sense on what seems to be slowing things up. You know, assuming the surgeons aren't concerned about any other complications, I think sometimes it's making modifications in how you're doing your therapy can sometimes, you know, push her over the edge in terms of getting things to start to respond a little quicker.
Yeah. That makes sense. Sonia, thank you very much for calling, and good luck with your daughter. Sandy in Fond du Lac, your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hello. I just am calling to say I had my left knee replaced back a few years, and my doctor ordered a passive motion machine, and I've heard negative comments about it, but I had it at home, and I have no trouble with range of motions. I didn't follow up as far as the strengthening portion of it, which was my responsibility, but that passive motion machine kept that knee moving, and I could increase the angle. So I can do anything with that knee. I have no pain. But also, I have to stress, it's what you put into it. And I had an excellent, excellent physical therapist. I had therapy at home. And she, on the very last day, made me get down on the floor to make sure she knew I knew how to get up again if I was by myself and I fell.
Hmm.
So it's, you know, she was so inclusive. So I'd say I was so blessed with my doctor, with my therapy, and all that. But it's well worth the effort. It's painful as all get out to begin with, but it's well worth the effort if you don't have the pain afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, Dr. Orwin, a comment?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I had a lot of friends ask me if I was going to have a CPM machine, which is a continuous passive motion machine. And it's interesting, back when I was training, we used them a lot. We used them a lot of our young sports patients, especially young males and females that had their ACL reconstructed. Because we thought that it would help with getting their motion back. And the problem with the CPM machine is, and you can literally spend an entire day in the CPM machine, but it's good for what I like to call the middle motions. It keeps your knee moving, and movement is very good for the knee in itself. But it doesn't help well with the extremes of motion. And especially in the knee, with a joint replacement, one of the most important things you want to do early on is get your knee to full extension, which means it goes fully straight. And the CPMs, even though you think you're getting your knee to full extension, you're not. And so then you sit in this machine for a couple of weeks. You're not seeing a physical therapist because they think the CPM's doing the work. And you get in there, and then the therapist realizes you're behind the eight ball. So I know there's people that still use them. But honestly, the hands-on work that a physical therapist or trainer will do is much, much better than what a CPM machine will do.
And on that note, oh, one quick thing. An avid runner wonders if they will be able to run again after a knee replacement. You got a yes or no for that?
Well, God bless them. I was never a runner. I never would have to worry about running. I ran a little bit in high school and ran with my basic sports. But, yes, I think runners can run after total joints. The younger you are, the heavier you are, the more impact you're putting on your knee, the more stress it puts on your total joint. But you know, ultimately, you'd like to be able to get your knee to last the rest of your life once you have a total joint. And if you're not overdoing it, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there trying to run even half marathons and marathons with their total joints.
Dr. John Orwin, thank you so much. Great to have you with us today. And thank you all for listening. And please stay with us.